me alone, my home away from home. Oh, Canada, sweet, sweet Canada, yeah. Please don't leave me alone, my home away from home.
What change will they see? What progress will we have made? This is our chance to answer that call. This is our home. This is our time to put our people back to work, open doors of opportunity for our kids, to restore prosperity, promote the cause of peace, to reclaim the American dream, and reaffirm that fundamental truth that out of many we are one. Spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God.
I'm a little son just begin his first grade. Oh, Canada. Sweet, sweet Canada. Please don't leave me alone. My home away from home. Oh, Canada. Sweet, sweet Canada, yeah. Please don't leave me alone, my home away from home. Raptors, Blue Jays playing in the center, in my red and white, damn, I have to enter. Big up all the preacher, big up all the teacher, big up all the hustle at the construction worker. Basic price shopper, Christmas shoe at the tata. All right, I'm looking fatter, our girls I'm looking hotter. If I catch my Navalata, still a shop a latta, eating center foot locker.
Someday we'll roll away the stone that we've carried for so long. All our burdens will be gone, and I can't wait. We will find our way to an understanding of all views. No prayer shall be refused, I can't wait. Too far, and now we don't know where we are. I believe we'll find a guiding star, but I can't wait. If faith is the final place where all fears have been erased and the locks have fallen from the gates, I can't.
Justice is a place where you can only sit at your laptop or by your phone if there's a member of the military with an earshot, a public affairs officer. Nice people, mostly, at times embarrassed or annoyed to be sitting there. But no police reporter or ethics is a place where you can only sit at your laptop. Is a place where you Guantanamo's Camp Justice is a place where you can only sit at your laptop or by your phone if there's a member of the military with an earshot, a public affairs officer. Nice people, mostly, at times embarrassed or annoyed to be sitting there. But no police reporter wants a uniformed cop a few feet away while he writes his story, interviews sources, or asks an editor for space. It's a place where you can go to court only in the custody of a military public affairs officer. Inside, if there's only one escort, if this happened this summer, and somebody has to go to the bathroom, every reporter has to leave court too. It's a place where a soldier stands over your shoulder, looks through your viewfinder, and says, "Don't you take that picture. I'll delete it." This happened this summer. It's a place where reporters are considered guests of the government. In court, that's the prosecution. The government controls the flights, the tents, the phones, the $100-a-week internet, even the toilet trailer. And it's a place where the Pentagon believes it can forbid you from including in your story the name of a man, a military interrogator, who was court-martialed for detainee abuse. It's a place where if you ask why, they tell you, "That's the rules, ma'am." If you say that wasn't the rule a year ago or a month ago, they shrug and say, "That's the rule. That's today's rule. You can't write that man's name anymore." Even though I learned his name after the interrogator rang up reporter Michelle Shepard at the Toronto Star and gave her an interview. To clear his name, he said, in 2008. I go to Guantanamo to write about a place the government intentionally chose to be outside the rule of law. The U.S. Supreme Court decided otherwise. It's a place the Pentagon likes to call the most transparent detention center on Earth. Hundreds of reporters have visited there, they say, since the first Al-Qaeda suspects arrived 8 years ago. They skip the part about how few go back more than once, stymied by the sheer frustration at the rules, the hoops, the time, and the cost of being a court reporter, writing a feature story, conducting an interview, engaging in the most fundamental work of journalism, to learn as much as you can, to read as much as you can, to question as much as you can, and to go to court, watch, and write the very best story you can about that day's testimony. People ask me what it's like to be a reporter at Guantanamo. It's hard. And not just because we sleep in tents with ventilators and generators that sound like you're inside a jet engine. Nearly everyone else expected in court that day gets housing. The lawyers have trailers, the translators get townhouses, and the judge and juries get guest quarters. The reporters get tents because if you protest, guess what they say? Don't come. It's hard to be a reporter.
Good morning. Good morning. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM, Plunder News. My name is Shannon, and we just faded out a little bit of, was it Carol? Oh, man.
The answer is no. This summer, I covered a really crucial conference here in Toronto.
Anyway, she's from the Miami Herald. Carol Rosenberg, there you are. Sort of the most prolific reporter out of Guantanamo. And she's just describing the conditions that the reporters are working under, which seems quite austere. And and I got VJ Sarma in this morning.
Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. And yourself?
Oh, very good. Thank you. Very good. Nice to be here. We're going to tackle the globalist agenda today.
I think so. That clip from Guantanamo Bay shows, you know, how they kind of beat down journalists and barely give them access, and then censure that access kind of heavily at Guantanamo Bay. And you know, it just seems like on some level, from the globalists, we're all getting a bit used to dealing with more of that sort of thing at airports, and just sort of expecting it from our government and expecting it from each other. And this is all part of a larger plan, which, you know, we can certainly talk about, and all of us can certainly help protect Toronto and Canada from.
Yes, righty. So, actually, I just want to change the flow here on this one. We got our captain here. He's got his words.
Mr. Kadar, as we've said in the past, faces very serious charges in the United States. Those charges have to be dealt with by the United States. And until that is done, I have no further comment.
This legal expert says even if Canada doesn't play ball, a deal is in the best interest of everyone else involved, and it would spare the Obama administration the embarrassment of trying a detainee who is a minor right around midterm election time.
The United States is not likely to get a conviction if the trial goes ahead, and they need to save face. They need to find some way of justifying locking up Omar Khadr for 8 years.
Yeah, and no, it's just surprising now that the tables have kind of turned on our PM. He's been sitting there with his head in the sand on this issue, on the Qatar detainee issue, and he's the only Western leader to ignore his people that are locked up in Guantanamo Bay. All the rest have been freed and returned to the country, at least, of their origin. And Canada here is sitting sort of how do you call it, firmly perched in the dark ages, I like to say, ignorant of rules like habeas corpus, which to me is seems like a fundamental tenet of our society. And now it looks like the Americans want to deal. They want to get rid of Qatar, right? They want the issue to sort of go away.
And you know, I've heard this brought up, you know, every year for the last 5 years, the Omer Khadr case. And maybe next week it won't be an issue. You know, I mean, that's the point. That's the problem. I mean, even just this copy of the Saturday Star you gave me here, just yesterday's newspaper, on the cover with George Smitherman and Rob Ford, and inside Joe Pantolone dancing with the stars. There's almost no issues discussed in this main section of the Saturday Star here, 2 days before an election on Monday. So I think that it's worthy to bring up kind of, you know, what the PM's role in this is in the sense of leaving an underage, a minor Canadian citizen stranded in, you know, the Guantanamo Bay kangaroo court system without doing much to extricate him. It could be any of us. I mean, if any of us Canadians was in there, you know, our government could treat us the same way. And for this to be done to a minor is ridiculous to not have, you know, some sort of calls for expediency. But at the same time, you know, we're fed a fairly thin gruel of news here. And the issue here is not so much about human rights or Qatar or the validity of the justice system. It's about, can Prime Minister Stephen Harper deal with this criticism? Can the Obama administration deflect some criticism? So it's all about how the parties are handling it, as opposed to, you know, what is justice in the situation that we should aim for achieving. So it's interesting, Shannon. I mean, you know, we're both broadcasters after fashion, morning news, trying to break down, you know, an alternate way of looking at things. And I think to understand how these stories are given to us and how we're supposed to argue about them can really give us a better idea of why, you know, these problems seem to persist.
I still think that it really is, the issue's turned on Harper, and he's gonna be sort of left holding the I don't know, some problem, because right now the U.S. I really see it as them wanting to sort of get rid of the issue, and Harper isn't playing ball. He's actually pushed the issue out back to the Americans, and it's making them look silly, which is seems to flow against his agenda. I just can't see it any other way.
No, you could be right. It's a Democratic administration there, and Harper's a bit of a neocon, so you know, he could be sort of sticking to his guns.
Yeah, with the November elections coming up, the primaries or whatever they call it in the States, and the fact that Obama is actually pledged 2 years ago at his election to the presidency to actually close down Guantanamo, and then to still have it open, and then have this very embarrassing kind of trial go forward right around the same time as the primaries. It's again, all the Western leaders are taking their guys home, and the only person left in Guantanamo, at least from the Western point of view, is Omar Khadr, a juvenile, 15 years old, when he was picked up unconscious and then accused of murder. Anyway, we should get... Sorry, I didn't mention, but Vijay is running for mayor. He's on the electoral ballot, which you'll be seeing on Monday. And, well, we're here really to talk about the mayoralty issue, but of course we put it in a global perspective. So that's why we're here today. I just wanted to mention, your website is What You Want to Believe In.
That's right, whatyouwanttobelievein.com. And definitely, I mean, think of voting. Think of voting for me, just so you know, we show the system that, you know, we know what's going on, and we know that you know, this election's been about bike lanes and cutting city council in half, and, you know, esoteric, you know, tax cuts here and there, or hikes for that matter. And possible transit expansion. But there are a number of issues that, you know, we discuss here with respect to the global perspective and how it affects us. I mean, things that big banks are doing to our economy, big pharma is doing to our health, you know, and you know, our socialization, that we need to deal with, because otherwise, I got a feeling, Shannon, I don't know about you, but I think that we're going to forget the majority of these topics for this, you know, obscenely long and obscenely shallow election cycle. I think we're going to forget most of these in a month or two.
Oh, yeah. Just there really, we're not talking about much in terms of policy or issue. There's no, how do you call it, referendum kind of issue that's being presented. And really, there should be. It's a shame. I think I'm going to play. This to me seems to be the biggest, one of the biggest issues that should be on the agenda, and is completely kind of missed by all parties, and would for me be an issue that I'd like to see on the agenda coming in the future. And
we need more people to say that, man. That'd be awesome. You know, just, this is something I'd like to see. What, really?
Yeah. Well, let me run it here, and we'll have, you'll know what I'm talking about. Oh, where is it? It's a dead piece of air. Oh, man.
No. The dead air.
There's nothing there. I can't believe it.
Well, it is Halloween.
Okay, well, I can sum it up. It's a PhD, Dr. Connell out of, actually, he got his education out of Berkeley, California. He said residing in some other university. I can't remember. He was on a radio program, and he basically says that, all right, on your tube of toothpaste, you've got fluoride is clearly labeled on your toothpaste, and it's also labeled now as being toxic, and there's a problem with the fluoride. So it's saying don't ingest your toothpaste. And if you swallow a pea-sized piece of toothpaste, that you should actually contact the Center for Disease or Center for
Poison Control,
excuse me. And so that basically a pea-sized piece of toothpaste is poison and that you shouldn't ingest it. And this is now documented, and it's actually pretty recently, in the last 10 or 15 years, that the Dental Association came out as with fluoride as being a topical application, meaning it doesn't get ingested. It's on the surface only of your teeth, and that's okay. But, and then he went on, this Dr. Connell went on to say that in a glass of water, if you break it down, in one glass of water is a pea-sized dose of fluoride. So when you drink that glass of water, you are poisoning yourself, according to the Center for Disease Control and doctors, you know, all over, around North America right now, today. And this, to me, is just, you know, no, this should be a big issue. We should be getting this out of our water, and it should be right on top of the agenda. It should be number one as far as I'm concerned right now.
Yeah, I made a song called Fluoricide, you can Google for that if you want. There's a minute and a half video on YouTube, Fluoricide. But essentially, they were protests against this, Shannon, back in the 1930s, protests against fluoride poisoning. And it was an industrial pollutant from the aluminum manufacturing industry. And they were trying to figure out how to get rid of it, and they didn't want to pay to get rid of it. So they worked with Edward Bernays, early propaganda master of the 1920s, to come up with a campaign to sell it to dentistry and sell its use in water supplies as a way to prevent tooth decay. And so it was a big marketing scandal. Before that, fluoride, which is also a roach and rat poison, you can still go and see the active ingredient in most roach and rat poisons at the hardware store is sodium fluoride, same stuff we use in our water. The communist Russians, the Soviet Union, and the Nazis used it on their prisoners to pacify their prisoners, because what it does is it makes you more sedate. It's one of the active ingredients in Prozac, the antidepressant, so it makes you numb. And it started off the environmental movement. A lot of environmentalists don't know this, but fluoride actually kicked off the environmental movement in Dannemora, New York. And this is in a movie called The Fluoride Deception with journalist Christopher Bryson. So tons of evidence. The Green Party just came out, good news, in the last couple of weeks on their website saying they have taken a firm stance against fluoride. Not a very, you know, publicized one, but they certainly have it on their website. So that's good news. Thunder Bay City Council, you know, said to get rid of it. You know, and if you go to fluoridealert.org, you can see they have sort of breaking fluoride news stories. Most of Western Europe doesn't use it. Montreal and Vancouver don't use it. Dr. Hardy Lineback, head of U of T Dentistry, said in 1999, after earlier advocating we should use it, said we should take it out. And frankly, Shannon, I just want to end on a point here because I'm all about what to do about this, because I'm just rattling off things which you can find on my website at whatyouwantabelievein.com if you want to double check the fluoride issue. But in the movie United We Fall, I was interviewed by Dan Dix and Brian Law, and I brought up the point that wouldn't it be great if we could take a copy of The Fluoride Deception, it's only half an hour, to each of our city councilors and our mayor's office and say, look, we never ask you for anything, but about, you know, 5-10 of us got together in my neighborhood, we got 500 signatures on a petition, and this petition is to ask you to watch The Fluoride Deception with journalist Christopher Bryson. Take 2 hours of your time, a half hour to watch it, you know, a half hour to maybe, you know, Google it, and then an hour to meet with us on video and let us know what your thoughts are on this exact documentary. Because Smitherman came out and said that, oh, Toronto's got some of the best water in the world in answer to a question about fluoride, and he just kind of, rah-rah, let's go. But essentially, if we're all judging the same thing, both the electorate, the public, the people of Toronto, and their elected officials, their city councillors, their school board trustees, and their mayor. If they're all judging the same thing, then they can all, you know, talk about or figure out how they feel about it. So, you know, and then if the views of your elected representatives don't match your own, then maybe they shouldn't be representing you, or maybe they should change how they're representing you. So this is a really simple, easy way to put pressure on our elected officials, is to sort of find some sort of way to get them copies and then get them to meet with you and then take back the results of their conversation with you to your other, you know, neighbors, basically, and then push for some action on these things. So you can't just get away with it by saying, oh, I think fluoride's good, I've heard fluoride's bad. You say, no, take a half hour, watch this, let us know what you think.
Yeah, and just telephone calls and email would be a nice way to start. But yeah, it's an issue that just seems like a no-brainer, and it seems to me an easy one. Like, I don't know, I had one of the politicians in my neighborhood came by, she's promoting herself for alderman, I guess they call it, and the first thing she jumped up with was subways. We need more subways in Toronto. And I was thinking, wait a second, we're in downtown Ward 21 or 19, or I don't even know what a number is, Trinity Bellwoods. You know, we don't need more subways down here. That's crazy. You know, like you're an alderman. And then even on the city issue, it's like, now you're talking, you got to get the federal and you got to get the provincial government involved. And you want to, you know, this is right on the top of your agenda. It's like, good luck getting it done in 4 years. You know, you probably won't get it. But fluoride, it's like right there, you know, it's like we control the water supply. It's Toronto Water Works, you know, it's right there, Ashbridge's Bay.
And fluoride costs $450 million a year to put into our water. Apparently, yeah. It's just a faucet that dumps it into the regular water supply. So it's not even an organic process of how they filter our water. And I agree with you. It's topical, man. I mean, even your dentist says spit it out when you go for a cleaning. You know, they say make sure you don't swallow that. So it's amazing. We live in this world of Orwellian doublethink. And I love this city. I love this country. You know, I love being free to talk about this stuff here, like you are here on your show, like I am with my campaign, like many other great people are in Toronto. And there's so much great sort of knowledge going on here. And if we can apply it to an issue like fluoride and, you know, score a major victory, you know, for our health, because it does cause, you know, supposedly bone cancer. It does rot holes in your brain, sodium fluoride. It does make you, you know, passive, It does lower fertility and male sterility, and it causes cancer. And so, you know, it's there's a million reasons to get it out of our water supply in general on behalf of our fellow Torontonians, even if we can afford, you know, different water or a better filter. So, yeah, you know, there's things that we can do. Shannon, I'm glad you brought this up because this issue really, really gets me ticked off because it's so obvious.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's like base one, you know, it's just, it's boggles my mind. And then to have the corporate politicians just totally ignore and then go on dancing there for TV points. It's just bizarre. It makes no sense to me. You know, we have to, you know, clean the air and we have to like clean the water. It's obvious.
Well, Shannon, I saw 6,000 zombies walking around Queen Street and Trinity Bellwoods Park yesterday, and I was amused, and I took some video and some pictures, and I was heading up to Queen Street anyway, and I just ran into him. I was like, oh, my God. I thought it was a video shoot at first. Yeah. And then I asked what it was, and it was just the zombie walk. And yeah. I'm thinking at the same time this is going on in Toronto, and I predicted this, you know, for about a year now because I saw they're making the classic novels, Pride and Prejudice, with zombies, Jane Austen, with zombies, you know, Wuthering Heights, with zombies. And, you know, they're introducing zombies and vampires, and it's sort of a larger trend they want to, you know, the forces behind globalization, the New World Order, wants to push through society for different ends. But the point is that at the same time as this is going on in Toronto, there are mass demonstrations in France against the raising of the retirement age from 60 to 62. And this isn't just a bunch of 60-year-olds
who
are flipping
out.
Oh, there's kids, there's families, there's, it's just, it's why, because they recognize a collective threat to their happiness, to their freedoms. The French take a lot, all that very, very seriously. And their vacation, you know, they paid into the system, you know, their tax rates are 70-80%, they're higher than ours, 60% here in aggregate. And they're sick and tired of being told that the system they paid all that money into is broke. And so just to juxtapose what's going on in France and in Greece and in Iceland and all across Europe.
It's starting in England, too, now.
England as well, with what's going on here in Canada and in the U.S. And we don't have things quite as bad. But we are feeling threatened. And so it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think we'll see, you know, a real organic sort of resistance to this? I personally, you know, I'm asking you, what are your thoughts on the people of Toronto doing the same thing as the people of Paris?
Wow. we're a way away from there. Like those zombies, just, you know, if you had a chance to talk to them, most of the issues that they would be concerned about, I don't think would be what we're talking about today. I don't know how many people are really listening. It's going to be an uphill battle, and you know, we have to sort of keep beating our head against the wall on these issues, and hopefully one day we'll see the light of day.
Well, this is fed by our media. I mean, I was just on Google News before the show here, and Google News Toronto Mayor, and the first article was from the Toronto Sun about the zombies. It was one guy saying a Ford needs brains, you know, holding a Ford needs brains sign. And that was the basis for the article. And that was for the Toronto mayor race. And if you just go to google.ca, google.com right now, and type in Toronto mayor and read the articles that are on there, you see how little we're being given of any substance to talk about, you know, with just a couple of days before the election. And I went through a bunch of articles today and I was like, oh my God, this is just such nonsense. And then, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, you know, during this campaign, obviously. And number one, most people aren't interested. Most people who know about globalization and the new world order and the massive threats to our city that, you know, we could take action on, you know, while people are politically interested, aren't interested in this election, almost because most people aren't interested. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're very, very polite. It's like, if we don't want to talk about it, then we don't talk about it. So most people aren't interested, or there are also other people who made up their mind quickly and then aren't interested in discussing the issues. They're interested in being, you know, like, it's Rob Ford, he's the man, or Smitherman, or, you know, Pantalone. Like, there's not a lot of substantive talk about the issues facing this city. It's certainly not entirely our fault. But when we can see whose fault it is, you know, with respect to our media and how they're covering this and what they're giving us to talk about in terms of even topics, then, you know, we can see why we need to get a bit more active on our own, which, I think many of us are doing. But really, really just, I mean, I was walking around condos last night, Shannon, until like 2 a.m, flyering. Just leaving little flyers at doors, you know, with the permission of the security. And I've been thinking, I did this a few years ago for my friend's, MPP campaign here. And I've done it a few times in Toronto. And I'm thinking you can get information about 9/11, about, you know, the climate change hoax, about, you know, the dangers of big banks and big pharma to counteract the marathons put on by big banks and big pharma, you know, and the pink washing that's going on around the city. You can get all of that directly into people's doors and hands and have a reason to talk to people about that during elections. And I've done a little bit of that myself. I've been frustrated. I've been going off on these things for a year now, but I've done that myself, and I know other people have done that. But it's a type of thing where collectively, we can feel like, you know, this is our chance to transcend this temporarily and then go back to, you know, whatever we do normally. Like, there's certain key moments where not just people who know, but people in general can respect the fact that, you know, we're getting, whoever gets more involved when we should get more involved, whoever gets more active when we should get more active, can do so in this city, and people are cool with that because we all understand, even if we don't want to. But if more of us do that, Shannon, I think we got a better chance of facing up to some of the austerity measures coming down the pipe for us as well.
Oh, yeah. No, people do need to wake up. And I was kind of surprised this summer when they didn't. The G20 just sort of blew through here and you know, messed up a whole bunch of people right in the face, and then, you know, they're gone. And 98% of the people just sort of like, oh, well, you know, I went to where I was out of town, you know, blah, blah, blah. I missed the whole thing. You know, it doesn't affect me. But it's so fundamental, the rights that have been violated, and just the step up of the militarization of our police. And it's right there in front of your face. You know, this is your future, buddy. If you got to do something about it now, or this is just coming back again. And
we got things going on in the U.S. We're part of the SPP now, the sequel to NAFTA. So there is sort of a North American Union block going on. And what's happening in the U.S. is they're making postering illegal in certain places. They're making flyering a warning sign as part of sort of anti-terror threat fusion law enforcement center reports, the MIAC reports, where they say anyone who flyers could be a potential terrorist. So they're expecting us to step up our efforts, and they're trying to counter that. So, you know, instead of reacting with fear and shutting down, we've got to get out there now, get the word out there now, while we have a public that is okay with, you know, people taking action, because we all recognize a sort of collective threat to our, you know, our happiness here. Canadians are sort of generally aware that there is an elite, there's a corporate elite, politicians lie, corporations lie, what are you going to do, you know, and that sort of thing. Like, there's a, that's the general sense. So when people do things, it beats the what are you going to do model. But we've got to get after these things soon. You know, between now and 2012, things are supposed to get a little crazy around here. So I'm with you, man. The G20 was awful. But I saw a couple of cops in an unmarked beater. I mean, an early 90s car, some Mazda, you know, something or other, on Dundas Street the other day. And I started noticing during the G20 the use of minivans and other sort of, you know, sort of stealth vehicles for them to cruise around in. And I don't even blame them. I just, there is a, you know, a war on terror policy based on the lie of the 9/11 attacks 9 years ago. And because it's been 9 years, you know, that's an issue that we can leverage, you know, into explaining the bigger picture and how that issue and others affect everyone. So I see this as an incredible opportunity, man. I see this as fantastic. You know, we like hearing that other people are doing things, and there are people around the world that are going crazy on these issues. You know, we like, you know, sort of, you know, being polite. So there are polite ways to introduce these topics into our culture. You know, we like, you know, creativity. So there are creative things that we can do. And that's a thing. And just to sort of sum it up, for my platform, that's how you beat the New World Order in terms of, you know, you can do these five things and in this city we'll be, you know, more or less somewhat protected and on the way to being, you know, stronger in terms of resisting the forces, you know, behind globalization using different agreements to push horrible policies. But now the question is, will we, you know, take those or other steps and other great ideas are out there. So by all means, you know, do your thing. We're all individuals here. You know, we can work together on certain issues. But you know, what will it take? What are the factors to get us going, to get us pushing past this? You know, if we're watching videos online, like on YouTube and stuff, then we can't be afraid of the government. Because the government knows we're watching videos. You know, our IP addresses are up there and so on. So it's not really a fear of the government. If we're not taking these issues on a more regular basis into the community to try and, you know, stop some kids from being vaccinated or fluoridated or the Globe and Mail had an article saying they're drugging boys at a ridiculous rate now, you know, with ADD drugs and so on. If we're not taking information to the community to stop that stuff from happening, is it because we're afraid of the reaction from each other? And how do we, you know, not be, and how do we certify that we don't have to be, is, I think, where this goes next.
There's a bit of an online revolt going on right now against that Officer Bubbles. He dropped a $1.2 million suit on YouTube for a series of cartoons that I got just mocked and kind of made fun of the officer that arrested a girl for blowing bubbles at the G20. But anyway, there's a good blowback happening right now that a lot of people have just stepped up with. Oh, yeah, well, that was me who made this comment, and my name is this. And oh, and here's the video. I kept a copy, and I'm not going to repost it back on YouTube. So, you know, put me down for your suit there, too. And that's a good sign. I'm pretty happy with that. Like, you know, this police officer should just resign if that's the problem. Like, you know, to start attacking the world on a freedom of speech issue just seems kind of pathetic.
Well, yeah, he tried to arrest a girl for blowing bubbles at him at a police line, and you know, I don't think she should have blown bubbles at him. I'm not trying to pick on her, but I certainly don't think he should have reacted like that. There's a beautiful female cop right beside him, yeah. Who was just sort of taking the whole thing in stride with a smile on her face.
Yeah, yeah. No, I met her, actually. That's the real Officer Bubbles. They call her Bubbles in the police office.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And meanwhile, outside the force, it's the other guy, the heavy hander. Actually, I'm going to just drop one more clip on us here.
Amen.
This is about voting. So it's an American perspective on voting, but hey, voting is voting, so everybody should get out there and do it. And, you know, one more I just want to say, you know, what you want to believe in. Vijay Sharma is fighting for the anti-globalist agenda. And, you know, from what you have to choose from, I don't think you have much choice but to say no to the corporate candidates. And look for something that's a little more for people. Anyway, I'm just going to drop this little quote coming out of the States. Progressive something or other. Where is it here? Let me push my buttons. I just want to get this out right off the top, right?
I would say that people died for their right to vote. And going to vote is no more difficult than going to buy a carton of milk. And if you can strike a blow against right-wing theocrats, hawks, crazy people, global free capitalists, you should go buy a carton of milk and go vote, if that's all you do in the next month.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you gotta step up and do something. You know, staying at home and pretending like, oh, there's nothing I can do about this. You know, I got to choose between those two blockheads. It's lunacy, you know. Please get out and go buy a carton of milk while you, around the corner is your polling station, you know. Drop in and check off some boxes.
I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, the establishment tries to trick us into thinking that voting is the only thing we should do. You know, there was a few years ago, Puff Daddy's Vote or Die campaign, and the Americans are especially good at this, where they just say, you have to vote. Voting is the thing. And they make each other feel guilty. Because some people say they don't vote, like Dave Chappelle. Other people be like, I don't vote. I don't trust any of these guys. People are like, oh, that's so horrible. You're letting down your country. And he's like, but they're liars. And Canadians like Alan Watt at CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, whose work I recommend to understand the big picture. You know, he also says, when are we going to stop voting? This is ridiculous. So there is an argument to be said there, but it all depends on what your options are. You know, if your options are, you know, two corporate candidates, then it would be better if, you know, 90% of Toronto said, I'm not voting. But if you have options out there, and there are options for city councilor, school board trustee, myself for mayor, and others, that can say, no, we are not happy with the corporate candidates you promote, how you promote them, and the issues they're running on. They're divisive. They seem deliberately divisive. You know, they're esoteric. They're obscure. They're forgettable. And they don't seem like the type of personalities who can really represent a city as diverse as Toronto, and who are talking about real issues that will benefit us. So yeah, I think that when you have options to vote for, that can say, you know what, system, screw you. We want better. You know, we're not going to keep dancing unless we get a new DJ. Like, you can't just feed us this junk, you know, every election season. Then I think it's worth voting, and I think it's worth expressing that.
Yeah, I just, I'm holding up a picture here of Naheed Nashi. That's Calgary's new mayor, and he's a fresh-faced non-corporate client or non-corporate candidate, and actually a Muslim. So he'll be the first Muslim elected to mayorship in Canada. And this one's it looks like an exciting campaign for a mayor in a city here. This is something that, you know, Toronto really needs.
Yeah, I would have loved to have had that guy's campaign. I think that he did a great job from what I've heard. He said himself that he's not a soundbite guy. He's not a wedge issue guy. He carefully explained a number of things that he wanted to do in his city, and he apparently broke it down in some detail, saying to the voters, you know what, I'm going to respect your intelligence. You know, if you have 5 minutes to listen to an explanation, then I'll give you a 5-minute explanation. If I've got to tweet it, then, you know, I'm not your guy. And apparently the people of Calgary listened, and they chose him. So congratulations to the new brown mayor of Calgary.
Yeah, it was basically an anti-mediocrity kind of campaign. And it just, it came out of nowhere, too. He was, out way down low in the polls, and then all of a sudden he was the man. So it's,
I'm hoping for the same tomorrow. We could use a brown mayor of Toronto.
Yeah. That's Vijay Sharma.
Yes, sir. It's fun, man. And honestly, like, I'm thinking of running into 2011.
Yeah.
Depending on, like, we just talked about fluoride at the start of this interview. If Mayor Smitherman or Mayor Ford or Mayor Pantalone, assuming I don't win, but, you know, if one of those guys wins and they don't take the fluoride out of our water, should they be mayor?
Well, exactly. No, it's, we have to build on what we're doing right now. And, you know, I make a pledge with you right now, Vijay, that, you know, if you don't get in as mayor, we're going to have to keep this thing going. And this is, you know, I think the fluoride issue could become your issue and help push you into the next election period. You know, like, this is obvious. This is just, to me, it's just simple. And
Let me ask you a question here, Shannon. I appreciate that, and I'd love to keep working with you, because I think it's great when you meet people that are genuine, that are concerned, that are taken. You know, you've got a really easygoing but effective manner on these issues, and I think that's important, because so many of us get worked up so often. I get worked up sometimes too often, and it's just good to have a steady hand at this, because I think people around us need to see a steady hand at this. You know, people around us who are concerned about these issues need to know that there's someone out there that can deal with them in a rational, you know, reasonable way. And I get more credit than ever for doing that, but I just get so worked up sometimes. but let me ask you a question here. If we do we have to wait until 2014 if we're not satisfied with this election?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think we wouldn't have to wait. You know, like, there should be issues that just sort of, you know, force an election. There's so much, again, it boggles my mind. It's, again, here we are having the election because I guess the timetable says we have to have an election. And this, you know, it seems to be a whole segment of the society thinks, oh, well, you know, we don't want to have too many elections now. They cost money, you know, like a few million dollars, you know. Meanwhile, they're going to throw $19 billion at this and X billion dollars at that. You know, it's like, that was $29 billion for two issues, you know, more planes and more prisons.
Well,
and meanwhile, you know, how far in debt are we? Meanwhile, we should just have an election for a few million and probably solve the problem.
The money thing's ridiculous. Like, the whole money thing is ridiculous, and it's now coming to bite us in the butt. You know, some of the guys like Paul Hellyer, former Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, founded the Canadian Action Party. You know, he was former Deputy Prime Minister of Minister of Defense under Trudeau. And then a few years later, he took a look at so he was second highest politician in Canada, you know, second highest political position in the land. A few years later, he took a look around and said, I got to start my own party. What would make a former Liberal Deputy Prime Minister start his own political party? It was the monetary issue. It was the issue of the Bank of Canada. It was the fact that we don't have sovereign control over our money the way we did until the 1930s here in Canada. Until the 1930s, the Bank of Canada printed our own money and spent it into the economy, loaned it to banks who loaned it to us, and the banks would profit off, you know, some interest they made. But it was all controlled within Canada, and it was controlled by the Bank of Canada and the government of Canada and, you know, by extension, the people of Canada. And then after the 1930s, and especially starting in the 1960s under Trudeau, Canada started borrowing more and more aggressively from international banks, building up a massive, you know, now I think $500 billion national debt, which we pay, you know, $50 billion a year, you know, whatever, periodically towards. And the reason I bring it up right now is all of that boring, potentially boring, it can be interesting, it's been made interesting, but all of that potentially boring monetary policy to wade through and the history of money is coming back to bite us in the butt now. This is the time when the IMF and the World Bank and other international lending institutions are saying to countries worldwide, because of your national debts, you're going to have to cut back on this. You're going to have to institute austerity measures. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in America. It's happening in Canada. It's happening worldwide as the banking system kind of goes for broke. So we can talk about money and how much this costs, and it'll cost another, you know, $8-10 million to hold another election, or this million for that, or they need another $74 for school books in the grade 8 class. It's all based on a fraudulent system where just paying the interest on our national debt sucks up so much of our tax money and is sucking up even more of our tax money that if we don't address that problem, it will overwhelm all the others, and we'll just get used to, you know, cutting things from our lifestyles as we lower our living standards and get used to austerity.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to go on this issue. We'll have to save this. I'm just going to mention it now. Save this issue for later. But the debt in America, which is much huger than Canada's, has actually reached a point where it's not going to be able, they won't be able to pay it back. I heard that it's going to run something like $30,000 per family over the next 70 years to pay back the debt. So when you reach that kind of level, it just, you know, it's a whole new subject. I want to bring it right back now.
Absolutely. Fiat money, though. They printed the money out of nothing, the international bankers. They loan it to countries and put them in debt. So it's based on a fraudulent system. So we can drop this, absolutely, Shannon, see the Money Masters, see Money as Debt, see America, Freedom to Fascism as good movies on these subjects to start. But, you know, ultimately, it's based on fraud. And so when you know it's based on fraud, and when we figure out this is based on fraud, credit cards are based on fraud, so much of this is based on fraud, then we can take action to not be robbed.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, you know, I want to just bring it back to, like, fluoride and Toronto and, you know, the future that we got to deal with here in Toronto. And, you know, we luckily have a little bit better on the financial front and possibly can avoid some of the drastic austerity that is being forced down on a lot of the international locations. But in Toronto, you know, again, this is drinking a glass of water right now is like poisoning yourself. And this is something we can take action on and, you know, it should save us money even in the short run. And, you know, I think this could be an issue that, you know, we'd like to sort of force on our leaders, whoever they will be, and get something to happen, because this is something that should be, you know, once you do a little research and you know, just listen to that half hour of, it's all over the internet. Just grab up any YouTube video and you'll have it right there in your face. You know, you're going to be afraid to drink the water. And I think every time you drink a glass of water in Toronto these days, you should maybe think about trying to do something about it, to like, for your children or, you know, for the neighbors. It's just get up, make the phone calls. You know, good old Rob Ford there, he's going to be answering your calls in 13 seconds or something. And I'd like to see him, you know, have to eat his words on that one, because he's getting too many calls on, you know, we need to fix this fluoride issue. And there's lots of other issues that I'm sure lots of people can get active on. And that's, I guess, what it should be, is just, you know, find yourself an issue and get active on it.
As long as it's in the context of the big picture. Because if you don't know the big picture, you could be fooled into supporting issues that actually, you know, there's a campaign, you know, here about getting off bottled water and pushing for tap water. Well, the problem is tap water is fluoridated. Bottled water is bad as well because it leaks xenoestrogen, again, feminizing, you know, guys and hyperfeminizing women, causing cancer and so on. You know, so there's lots of issues, but, you know, within the big picture context, Shannon, I'm 100% with you. Pick anything. And fluoride and health issues are so neutral. No one will say anything to you for trying to improve their health in this city. And that's something I think we can all understand and appreciate and use.
Yeah, no, it's your life, you know, and there's so many poisons, like the BPA is the issue right now. The federal government actually banned the issue. It's like, okay, now that it's banned, you know, let's remove it from the cans and the little juice containers have that, the ones you send off with your kids there.
Drinking boxes, yeah.
Yeah. So it's pervasive. It's everywhere. There's GMOs, holy mackerel. Like, you don't even, that's another issue. You know, we got to stop the GMOs. You know, everybody's pretty much, I heard in Japan that they're basically, there's no GMOs in Japan. They're waiting for basically it to all shake down in North America. I think North America is the testing ground for the GMOs?
Well, yeah, because here they say that we shouldn't label them because then it might scare consumers. You can see links for all these topics, by the way, at whatyouwantabelievein.com, GMO foods, fluoride, and everything else. And just because, honestly, Shannon, there are inspirational stories out there. There are people burning down GMO crops in Europe and India. They're saying, no, we're not taking this. Like, there are people getting productively and happily and enjoyably angry. And frankly, if we are getting screwed, then, you know, doesn't getting mad feel better than not?
Yeah. Whatever it takes to get you up and out, get active, you know, protect yourself, protect your family, protect your loved ones. All right, we're going to sign off for Plunder News. Don't forget, vote Vijay Sharma tomorrow night. Tomorrow night.
Wow. Tomorrow during the day.
Oh, yeah. Depends on your working hours there. There's polling stations all around town. And don't forget, fight the globalist agenda. And thanks, VJ.
Thank
for coming.
Thank you, Shannon.
In. CKLN 88.1. Till next week, Thunder News. Through, there is no wrong together.
Today my world, it smiles. Your hand in mine, we walk the miles. Thanks to you, it will be done. For you to me, I'm the only one. If the sun refused to shine, I would still be loving you. Mountains crumble to the sea.